some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
And we are back. What is up, everybody? FTN DataCast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here. It is May the 18th, 2023, on a Thursday. And this is, you know, I was talking earlier, maybe my most exciting time of the season for me for fantasy, because we're doing all this analysis, we're diving into all this data, and we're trying to make cases for players that we love. And it's right before all of us are just completely wrong. Of course, we hope to be right, and we strive to be right way more than we are wrong. And help me do that today with some breakout candidates for the 2023 season. My colleague over at FTN Fantasy, Scott Spratt. You can follow him on Twitter at @Scott_Spratt. Scott, we've been doing some pods the last couple weeks. It's been fun. Appreciate the time. And look, I can't... You obviously do incredible work over at FTN, but I can't have the FTN DataCast without an episode of, you know, one of the best guys in the industry when it comes to data. So, Scott, appreciate the time. What's going on?
Well, I appreciate the kind word, Adam. I know you know that I love you because I'm here with you recording when I could be watching Jordan Spieth play golf. So it's pretty high standards.
Yeah, and as somebody who's really gotten into golf the last month and a half, 2 months, I'm with you. Actually, I believe my uncle and my dad are both at Oak Hill right now. So, I'm not there, so I'm pretty upset. But yeah, it's in Rochester, I believe, which is, you know, not too far from where I'm from in upstate New York. So yeah, PGA Championship on. We had great, speaking of that, we had great content for that with the PGA team. So hopefully, you know, it's a good weekend for a lot of people. But yeah, Scott, before we get started, kind of talk about a lot of the stuff you're doing in terms of, you know, written content. I know maybe as much as anybody how hard you work on the back end with the FTN data stuff. So before we get started with some of these breakout candidates, tell the people a little bit about what you're doing, not just, you know, on the site on itself, but especially on the back end, because trust me, I appreciate it as much as anybody for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, I've been doing a lot of stuff lately that hasn't quite made its way to the public eye yet. Mm-hmm. The biggest and sort of a foundational piece of a lot of what we have coming up at FTN is based on an expected points added model, which I've been working on. And I think I'm kind of polishing off, kind of going back and forth with it a little bit with Frank, another one of our data guys, recent promotion there. So congrats to Frank.
Yeah.
But basically the bulk of it is like looking at how successful plays are and kind of figuring out ways to give credit and blame for that success to individual players. It's a lot more complicated than just looking at yards and touchdowns. Like a lot of things go into that. If you have a 10-yard rushing touchdown, you know, the run blocking probably had a lot to do with that. And so I think it can get a little bit tricky to look at traditional metrics and try to evaluate how good players are. I mean, we're going to sort of tease that out, I think, on this show with some of our breakout candidates. But the EPA model, I think, is going to be a really nice way to objectively do that. And it's got some pretty sophisticated little nuances to it that I think are going to make an improvement on some of the publicly available stuff. And I'm going to get all of that out there into the public eye, and hopefully everybody can enjoy that. And maybe, you know, if they have some contributions to add, they can let me know.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that stuff too, because in one of my dynasty leagues recently, there was like a poll to make quarterback interceptions like more impactful, so you lose more points. And I'm like, I get it, but like, there's probably so many interceptions every season where the quarterback throws a perfect pass and it just hits the receiver in the chest. And it's so like a lot of that stuff is like, yeah, like kind of like what you mentioned, like not, raw fantasy points and raw rushing totals, for instance, are not the end all be all. That's why I love getting into all this data and stuff, because it can really help you paint a clearer picture. And that's what we're going to try to do today on the breakout episode. So again, we'll probably revisit this in a month or so. But look, we're at the point now where the draft's over, free agency's over. There's a couple players, especially at the running back position, that'll probably land somewhere. But let's get right to it. I guess we can start at quarterback. There's, you know, always, I feel like every year, it's like the quarterback position is so deep, but then two or three quarterbacks emerge and the position becomes even more deep. So I think I forget, you know, you sent me your list yesterday. I haven't looked at it since, so I don't even remember who you have at quarterback, but I feel like the consensus choice will be Justin Fields. I don't know if that was your choice, but I'm sure you would choose him as well to break out. But what are you looking at in terms of quarterback breakout candidates?
For the most part, I tried to go a little bit deeper. At least from a fantasy perspective, I feel like Fields is already an established, amazing option. And so I went with Kenny Pickett as my potential breakout for quarterbacks. A guy that I feel like is weirdly off of radars despite being last year's first round pick. But I think there are a couple of reasons for that I'll explain here. The first is that Pickett, I think you mentioned about how quarterbacks often throw interceptions that bounce off of their receivers' hands. I think Pickett was a little bit of a victim of that in a smaller sample of starts last year. And if you actually look at his turnover-worthy pass percentage, which kind of factors that stuff out with the FTN charting data, it was at just 3.1% last year, which was the third best of regular quarterbacks. And let me tell you, the top 10 on that list, it's not a bunch of guys that are off of radars. Hurts was number one, Justin Herbert number two, Pickett was third, then Burrow, Daniel Jones, Patrick Mahomes, Matthew Stafford, Kyler Murray, Trevor Lawrence, and Andy Dalton. A lot of Pro Bowlers in that top 10 right there, Adam. I might say that maybe Pickett could be Andy Dalton 2.0, which might sound bad, but I think it's actually pretty encouraging. The arm strength isn't great, but it seems like he showed really good decision-making and accuracy as a rookie. And I think that's really telling as a potential way for him to break out in season two.
Yeah, like admittedly, because I'm really interested in George Pickens this season, but I also haven't like done a lot of deep dive analysis with Kenny Pickett, other than the fact that George Pickens was a lot more productive for fantasy once Pickett took over, because he would take more shots down the field and he would give his receivers way more opportunities to make plays. And like, you look at it, Pittsburgh's pretty much always going to be running three wide. They run three wide as much as anybody. They have, honestly, like, whatever you think Allen Robinson has left. But even besides that, like, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth, and whatever they get from A-Rob is still pretty good. And, like, do we expect Deontay Johnson to have 120 targets and zero touchdowns again? Probably not. And the other thing with Kenny Pickett, too, is he threw the ball deep a lot. And it started, I think, that first start he had. It was the game he came in for the first time. They were like inside the 10-yard line and called like three design runs for him. So I don't think that's going to be like a huge part of his game, but I think it's going to be a little bit. So, and I've seen a lot of people that are smarter than I saying that like the Steelers could be like a surprise team that win like 10, 11 games because they have a lot of talent across the board. They made, additions to the offensive line, which is always important for them. So I kind of like the case. And again, it's not like you have to draft him in redraft leagues at all, but like even in Dynasty too, like he's probably the number one quarterback on your bench in Superflex leagues, but like there's like top 15 upside to be had there, I think.
Definitely.
I think you sold me, which means you've already done your job. You don't have to do anything.
I can sell you even more because I think the Deontay Johnson piece of this dovetails into the second reason that I'm so optimistic. Pickett only threw 7 touchdowns last year. That's not very many, obviously, right? But using some of the opportunity adjusted touchdown research that I do and often write about on the site, he was the unluckiest quarterback in terms of expected touchdown shortfall. I use the term lucky a little bit loosely there because one way to throw fewer touchdowns than expected is to be bad. And some of the quarterbacks on the list here, I think you could probably make that case. Colt McCoy was fairly high, even though he didn't start that many games. But it's not that unusual for a rookie quarterback to have that shortfall and then have a huge breakout his next season. So Pickett threw 11.7 fewer touchdowns than expected based on where he threw his passes last year. Trevor Lawrence in his rookie year, 11.4 fewer touchdowns than expected. Joe Burrow in his rookie year, 7.8. And so while you would expect pretty much any quarterback to make a step forward from year one to year two, that trio all had an opportunity for like an even doubly high step forward because they were unlucky relative to expectations in year one. And the chances in year two is probably average, could even be above average in a great case. So there's a huge potential jump here for Pickett that other quarterbacks that have better aligned results to expectations can have.
For me, I don't think he's had a full breakout season yet, but he's been like a fringe QB1 in fantasy. But like, I really like Daniel Jones' situation. First of all, like I was very high on him coming into last season because I'm such a huge fan of Brian Daboll. And we saw, like, the thing I love most about Brian Daboll is the fact that, and we saw it in that playoff game against, what was it, Minnesota? Minnesota, what were they all last season? Massive pass funnel. They couldn't stop the pass. They were fine against the run. Even with Saquon Barkley in the backfield, Brian Daboll said, we are throwing and throwing every play because they can't stop us. And Daniel Jones had a huge game. And that's why I love Brian Daboll. He puts his players in the best situation to succeed. You add Jalin Hyatt. You add Darren Waller. You add, you know, five different slot receivers on top of that. And then the huge hole on the offensive line was center. They get John Michael Schmitz, who was potentially a first-round talent. They got him. And, like, Daniel Jones last year, what, 700 rushing yards. He was top five in quarterback design runs. I don't think that's leaving their offensive scheme. Daniel Jones last season was quietly top six in adjusted completion percentage on deep passes. What hurt him a lot was Darius Slayton couldn't catch deep passes. They didn't really have a consistent deep threat. Jalin Hyatt, whether you love him as a prospect or not, he's outstanding running vertical routes. He has great hands. He catches away from his body all the time. So I trust Brian Daboll to put him in situations. Yes, I know he was mostly at Tennessee, schemed up, open looks, free releases in that spread offense. But I trust Brian Daboll to put him in the best situation to find success. And then Darren Waller. Like, Darren Waller, yes, he's 30. Yes, he missed most of last season. But, like, pretty easily the best pass-catching player this team's had since Daniel Jones has been there, right? So, like Saquon Barkley led this team in targets last season with 76. Like, Barkley's an amazing player, but they need more at wide receiver and tight end. They got that. Jones will give you 700, you know, 600 to 700 rushing yards and 4 to 5 rushing touchdowns. So, yes, he was pretty much a borderline QB1 last year, but he also, speaking of low touchdown passes, he only threw 15 touchdowns last year. Like, I'm not saying he's going to throw 30, 35, but you get him closer to 20, 25 on top of the rushing production. Yeah, like, Daniel Jones, once again, going into this season, will be one of my favorite quarterbacks to look to if I fall asleep at the wheel at the position. Like, after, like, I think the consensus top 10 in some capacity will be, obviously, you know, Mahomes, Hurts, Allen, Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Fields, Herbert, Dak, Lawrence, probably Deshaun Watson. And after that, like, if I miss out on that, I'm going Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I like the Jones call for two reasons. For a player like him that takes a pretty significant step forward, like randomly in year three or four, randomly seeming, I'm always afraid of the plexiglass principle, right? Which is basically the axiom and the thing that we've seen proven over and over again, that players that have kind of unusual success based on their previous career history revert back to their previous standard the next year. And so I'm scared of schedule in that case. But actually, the Giants had a middling schedule. They had the 17th hardest schedule by DVOA last year. I don't think that's something that you expect to get it dramatically different the way that, say, last year the Eagles had the easiest schedule in the league.
And especially for Daniel Jones, like, you can look at his schedule and say, oh, this team is, you know, second against the pass. But, like, that doesn't really tell the whole story, because Daniel Jones can – like, Daniel Jones ran for 25 – like, he essentially started with, like, 2.5, 3 fantasy points every time without even throwing a pass, because most of the time he's giving you 25 to 30 at minimum rushing yards.
And that's the other piece of this, which is that there's a very easy reason to understand why his rushing productivity and production increased, which is he got a new coach who was willing to use him differently than his previous coach, right? So suddenly Jones is running as often as Josh Allen was, and I think there's no reason to not expect that to continue. Sorry for the double negative. Yeah, I think he is now one of those top rushing options at quarterback, even though that's not necessarily something we expected from him 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I just, like, I was actually lower on Jalin Hyatt coming into the NFL draft than a lot of other people, but this landing spot actually has me higher on him because I trust Brian Daboll so much. And, like, if they can stay healthy, like, Sterling Shepard, Wan'Dale Robinson, Jalin Hyatt, Isaiah Hodgins came on down the stretch for them, and then Darren Waller, plus you still have Saquon Barkley. I mean, it's not Cincinnati in terms of, you know, overall skill level on offense, but, like, that's a good group, and especially good enough for Daniel Jones. You're just hoping gets to, like, 25 passing touchdowns anyway, on top of the 650, 700 rushing yards you'll probably get from him. So, yeah, I love Daniel Jones. Let's go to running back, unless you have anything else at quarterback. Running back's tough because it's, like, it's a revolving door, right? Some, you know, 1 year it's this running back is in this great spot, and all of a sudden the next they are completely out of the equation almost. So there's definitely still some players that stand out, though. You have a player from Jacksonville that I'm actually lower on, so this will be interesting.
well, if Dalvin Cook ends up with the Jaguars in like a week, then I'm going to take all of this back. But
first of all, that'd be equally awful because Jeremy and myself are very high on Tank Bigsby. So that would be just brutal.
Real slap in the face if that happens. But fingers crossed, I'm going to say Travis Etienne. Maybe he's a little bit too already successful to make this call. And I have a little bit deeper of a guy to say if not. But I like Etienne a lot because I think his touchdown upside is tremendous. It gets a little bit into what I was talking about with Kenny Pickett, which last year Etienne scored just 5 total touchdowns, but had, you know, double that in terms of expected touchdowns.
Yep.
And I think it really hammers home when you say it this way. Etienne was tied for 7th among running backs with 47 red zone carries and targets. No one else in the top 10 in that had fewer than 9 touchdowns, and he had 5. Like, maybe Etienne isn't the best goal line back. Like, he's probably leans a little bit more towards like elusiveness than he does power, but I don't care. The best way to get touchdowns is to get touches near the red zone. He got them and didn't score. I think it's a super unlucky thing. Like, we saw guys with that type of shortfall in the season revert back last year. I know Joe Mixon being a big example of a guy that just like went off for 5 touchdowns one week. I think that easily could have happened for Etienne, but didn't. And I think he has a really good chance to score a lot more with a similar workload this season.
So I've done a lot of analysis on Etienne and Tank Bigsby and this Jacksonville team over the past couple weeks. And I'm leaning towards, like, if someone has Etienne ranked in the top 10, I think it could be like a bust situation. But also I could be completely wrong because Etienne was bad in short yardage last season, right? I struggle with, like, and this is where like data and watching the game go hand in hand, because like, He was not good at converting touchdowns. I think he had 10 carries inside the 5, only had 2 touchdowns. Jacksonville would run a lot of this wildcat with him, and he just wasn't effective. But also, like, if he's just getting that role again, you expect the positive regression to hit, especially in an ascending offense. My concern is, do they want Tank Bigsby to have the short yardage role? Because Tank Bigsby was amazing in short yardage in college. He converted nearly 80% of his carries into first downs or touchdowns that were short yardage carries. And then there's the aspect of, and Jeremy actually brought this up, I believe, which was a really good point. I believe it was Jeremy. It's probably Jeremy. He loves Tank Bigsby. That in college at Auburn, Tank actually ran a lot of that wildcat. So maybe that's something they were looking at when they drafted him. This could be completely galaxy brain type thinking here. But the other thing too with Etienne, like, he was, you know, coming out of Clemson, there was this notion that he was this elite pass-catching running back. And he's always been overrated as a pass-catching running back. And he showed that last year. He had some bad drops. Looking at the player utilization tool at FTN Fantasy, among running backs with at least 20 targets last year, Etienne had the 4th lowest target per route run rate at 14%. So you add Calvin Ridley to the offense, I don't expect him to be, you know, a massive, you know, Etienne that is. I don't expect him to be like a massive contributor in the passing game. So, like, if I'm wrong and he just gets the goal line work again and just is more efficient, which you'd expect, I could be just completely off on Etienne to be way lower on him than I should be, especially if this offense is as good as we expect it to be. But we've also seen Doug Peterson have multiple running backs in his backfields for a lot of the time he's been a coach or an OC. So I'm not saying Tank Bigsby's coming in and taking Etienne's job or even getting, like, 10 carries a game. But if he gets, you know, a couple, like 5 to 6, and gets the Jamal Williams carries, and that could be a problem. But Etienne, there's always a player every year where I'm like, I am terrified that I'm going to be completely wrong on this player. That's probably Travis Etienne for me.
I disagree with a lot of what you're saying for 2 major reasons. One with Etienne specifically is that I think he led running backs in average yards after the catch. So, like, I actually think he was quite good as a receiver last year, and I don't think that's going to be going anywhere this year. The other part is with Tank Bigsby. I get that his name is Tank, but he's not that big. Like, he's 6 foot, 213 pounds. Yeah. Actually, by BMI, Etienne, who's 5'10", 210, is bigger. And I know he doesn't run that way. I'm not going to say Etienne deserves to be, like, pounding it up the middle every time. But, like, I don't think Bigsby is going to be coming in there to be, like, Brian Robinson, for example. But here's the trick, and here's why I'm more open than even usual to being potentially wrong with this, is that I can sit here and tell you that when a player gets red zone touches, that's more predictive of their future touchdown scoring than their actual touchdowns. But you know who doesn't always think that way? NFL head coaches and play callers. And, like, if Doug Peterson decides that, hey, Etienne really didn't get it done in the red zone last year, he's not going to give him that work going forward.
Yeah, I mean, look at Tony Pollard last year. Literally one of the best running backs in the entire NFL, but they just didn't trust him inside the five. Like, there was plays where he would rip off a 15-yard play, and I remember it. He was looking at the sideline expecting Zeke to come in, and he like shook his head and like waved him off, and they still put Zeke in.
Yeah. So basically, if Peterson changes his mind on this, then I'm going to be wrong. And that, and that's
and
just
if he doesn't,
where it is.
And if he doesn't, I'm going to be wrong. So it all comes down to Doug Peterson for me and you.
Pretty much.
But overall, like, I don't have ETN outside of my top like 16, anything like that. I just have him a little bit further away from like top 10 than I've seen some other people. But again, if one of the two changes, right, whether he, even if he loses some of the goal line work, but his targets go up and everything, that could be all the difference too. Who else at running back stands out to you? There's a couple players that were on my list, like James Cook, you can make the argument for. Yeah. My problem is we still have this, like, every year, Sean McDermott, yeah, we want Josh to run less. He's going to run less, and then he doesn't. The one thing I will say, and I said this the other day, Josh Allen, I believe, this is the first year he himself has said he has to run less. I just don't know if I see it coming. But, like, James Cook was incredibly efficient last year, and, like, we talked about it, like, on this podcast right now, the number one Singletary fans in the world. But I think we would have both agree James Cook, probably a little bit more talented at least.
Well, more explosive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure more elusive, which I know that's kind of flying in the face of expectations.
No, listen, until I see it, he's not more elusive than Singletary. He's been like top 12 in elusive metrics since he's entered the NFL. And in college, that's all he did, so.
So my second running back candidate here, and this is probably bordering on a little too obvious too, is Rashad White. But the thing that I wanted to bring up with White.
I don't think so, though. Like, I don't even think ETN's too obvious because, like, it's not like he played his rookie year than did what he did last year. Like, last year and until the James Robinson trade was when he really started to show that upside. So I don't even think these are too obvious at all.
Well, I think people are going to realize that White seems to be the main guy now there with the Bucs now that the Leonard Fournette seems to be going. But the thing that I want to point out here that could be missed is that White ran a route on 50.7% of his passing snaps last year, which was the fifth highest rate among regular running backs, and basically the same as Leonard Fournette at 52.5%. And while you may not think of Fournette as being a major pass catcher, mainly because he's just absolutely huge, he's actually had 69 and 73 catches the last two seasons, both a third most among running backs in those years. I know Tom Brady is probably the biggest driver of that reliance on running backs for catches, but White seems to have that pass-catching gene, and if he's the featured back, like, oh my God, we could end up with a ton of work here and a ton of receptions, and even if it's not totally efficient, which it might not be if the quarterback stinks, from a fantasy perspective, it's not going to matter, especially if you're getting any kind of PPR.
Yeah, I mean, I was fully expecting Tampa Bay to draft one of the running backs that went in round 3 or 4, Roschon Johnson. I know Roschon visited with them, so I was like, okay, we're going to get excited about Rashad White, and then Tampa's going to draft Roschon. That didn't happen. They obviously signed Sean Tucker, who was UDFA, because of the medical concerns. If Sean Tucker is, like, good to go, we know Sean Tucker is not a UDFA talent. He's, like, a third-round talent. So I don't think it's out of the range of outcomes that if Sean Tucker's like fully healthy and able to play football, that he takes some work away from Rashad White, but that's asking a lot right now. And yeah, I mean, Rashad White's, remember, like, once Rashad White started to take work away from Fournette, they essentially went every other drive. It was Rashad White would start, then Fournette would come in for a drive. And it was almost like you had, like, I remember this one game, it was Sunday night against Arizona. They did the same thing they've been doing. Rashad White started the game, played the first drive, then Fournette would come in for the drive, and then it would be Rashad White the next drive. I don't know how it happened, but every drive Rashad White was in, Tampa went 3 and out. Every drive Leonard Fournette was in, they drove down the field. And it was just, now you don't have to worry about that this season, right? He's probably going to see, you know, I don't do projections, but like he had 130 carries last year. I would expect him to be in like a 210 range probably. And we think, you know, I don't think we see, because Tom Brady was like top of the league in average seconds to throw. Like he just snapped the ball, got the football out. I don't think we see that type of reliance on the short passing game, but I also don't expect it to be too much different. So I think 50 catches in the range of outcomes. He was incredibly inefficient on the ground, but so was Fournette in the entire Tampa Bay, you know, run game. So yeah, like I think you're looking at 260 touches potentially, with, you know, 40 to 50 of those being receptions. The offense might not be great, but I don't think it makes too much of a difference, especially because, like, I thought they would draft a running back in like the third or fourth round. So, and then you were worried about being too obvious. I'll just get this out of the way. Tony Pollard, obviously, right? Like, he's been one of the most efficient running backs in football the last couple seasons, and now he's getting goal line work most likely. And we heard all offseason, the only thing that could change this is if they do bring back Zeke, because Zeke was third in the NFL in carries inside the five. Tony Pollard only had six. Zeke had like 70% of their carries inside the five. But like Dallas said, they wanted to bring in a running back with more size after they released Zeke. And they brought in Ronald Jones, who's like 5'9". And then they drafted Deuce Vaughn, who's 5'6". So didn't exactly do that. Pollard's the obvious breakout candidate. Elsewhere, like J.K. Dobbins, I don't know if he's fully broken out yet, but like I'm really excited about Dobbins.
I just got absolutely flamed on Twitter because I was like, why do the Ravens want to go after Bijan Robinson? Because I think J.K. Dobbins is better. And like,
I did see that.
People didn't like that. You know, I was probably exaggerating a little bit, but I mean, Dobbins led running backs in the league last year in rushing DVOA rate. Like, there was no rushing offense more efficient than his when he took the ball. I mean,
and
I
think he was Lamar
deserves credit there, but like, he is a good player.
And he wasn't at his full abilities too, because he was coming off not just, he has the same injury that Javonte's coming back from. It's like torn ACL and LCL. So he was a little bit like slow to get going and hesitant when I was watching him too. Remember he like broke off a long run one of his first two games back, and everybody was like, is he still hurt? Because like, he just didn't look fast. And like, newsflash, like that'll happen.
So with Pollard, I think there's one potential trap here, which is that sometimes when you look at running backs and you equate size to height, you kind of get the wrong idea. You can be big and short. And in fact, a lot of running backs are, and I would say Devin Singletary, one of our boys, he gets called small a lot because he's so short. He's 5'7". But like, from a BMI perspective, he's actually pretty well built. Mm-hmm. And we've seen him hold up to a lot of carries and in fact have some success in short yardage type situations. He didn't get it a ton because you're right. They just like want Josh Allen.
My thing
with
Singletary
to die,
too, and it's why everybody, like during the Zach Moss hype era, I was like, yeah, Zach Moss theoretically you would think would be a better option at the goal line. The difference is Devin Singletary has really plus vision and Zach Moss does not.
And so where I'm going with this is that Tony Pollard is very small. He's 6 foot and 209 pounds. So he's like honestly taller than a lot of running backs in the league. From a BMI perspective, he is like well below the threshold that we typically see from a featured back. And so I want to warn people, I'm not going to tell anybody not to draft Pollard. The dude is amazing and incredibly elusive, but like he scored 12 touchdowns last year and he could get more goal line work this year. I don't think he scores 12 touchdowns this year or maybe ever again.
That's fair.
He scored a lot from long range last year. And I just don't think it makes sense to take a guy with his skill set and give him that kind of work. Like, he's way smaller than Travis Etienne, way smaller.
Is he for you? Like, where are you drafting him if they go into the season without Zeke there? Like, is he on the turn, like the 1-2 turn, or are you a little bit lower?
Yeah, I mean, I think top 10 is absolutely fine, because I think you're hoping for 225 to 250 total touches, maybe ideally 50 of those being catches, incredibly valuable. And if he gets 7 or 8 touchdowns, great. You've absolutely returned on the value there, and there's just not enough good running backs to draft.
Yeah.
So I would rather take the chance there and kind of go bargain hunting at wide receiver a little bit later, where it's a lot easier to grab guys in like the 9th, 10th, and 11th rounds that have a chance to be contributors than in my mind it is a running back. Like, I know that you can go zero RB, but that's hard.
And think about all the running backs that usually have been going around that range that we're pretty much losing, right? Fournette, Zeke, Dalvin Cook's probably, you know, not going to be with the Vikings. He won't be where he usually been in terms of like late first, early second. Alvin Kamara. So that obviously pushes guys like Tony Pollard, Ramondre Stevenson, Travis Etienne, et cetera, up as well. Let's go to the wide receiver position where, I mean, we have usually it feels like the breakout wide receivers tend to be the receivers entering their second season. There's a handful of really good ones. Right. Garrett Wilson is obviously going to be the chalk, but you're looking towards Atlanta.
I am. And while I'm certainly not going to tell you not to draft Garrett Wilson, I think you'll probably get a little bit better bargain for Drake London. And I think his chances of improving dramatically are really, really good this year. And I don't even necessarily love Desmond Ridder, But here's the deal. Last year, London saw a 46.2% catchable target rate. That wasn't just the lowest among regular wide receivers. It was way lower. So again, 46%, second lowest, 56%, which was both Christian Kirk and coincidentally Garrett Wilson. I think everybody's ready to look at the Jets and say, hey, like, we're moving from Zach Wilson to Aaron Rodgers. I bet Garrett Wilson's going to have a lot better success this year. And he will. But London saw so many fewer catchable targets last year than anybody else and still wasn't like entirely unproductive. What did he have? 800 and some receiving yards. If Ridder is any kind of competent this year, then London is going way over 1,000 yards and he's going to be really good. And I think he's going to be a really nice value for players because I don't think the expectations are as high as you would expect from a former number one first round wide receiver there.
Yeah. And like, again, Atlanta hardly threw the football last season, but Drake London absolutely dominated, you know, target share, targets per out run, everything. Kyle Pitts definitely missed some games too. But yeah, like, I think the talent's obviously there, and he doesn't have to play in, you know, this top five passing offense, because when they throw the ball, it's probably going to him or Kyle Pitts. So, and then yeah, like, in case anybody like freaks out, obviously Garrett Wilson's like the prime breakout candidate playing with Aaron Rodgers. I was looking at some of the advanced FTN data, looking at first read targets yesterday. According to FTN data's first read targets, number one in first read targets last year, Justin Jefferson. Number two, Devontae Adams. Number three was Garrett Wilson, and that was playing with three different quarterbacks who were all below average to bad. And we know the splits last season in games Garrett Wilson played without Zach Wilson, like 17.5 fantasy points per game. So Aaron Rodgers is not Zach Wilson. Obvious breakout candidate is Garrett Wilson. But I'm going to a second-year wide receiver that isn't Garrett Wilson. It's not Drake London. It's not Chris Olave. It's Jahan Dotson in Washington.
Yeah.
I really like Jahan Dotson. He had a weird rookie season where he started the year really, really hot, right? Multiple touchdowns. First 4 weeks, he had four touchdowns, four end zone targets in that span. You don't expect that type of touchdown production. Then he obviously had the injury, didn't play again until week 10. But then he closed the season with three games of 70-plus receiving yards over his final five, three touchdowns in that span. And in that same stretch, he actually had the same target share as Terry McLaurin. And looking at the FTN data, we have a lot of awesome stuff, but especially you can look at what receivers do against certain coverages. And according to FTN data, Dotson led all receivers with at least 50 routes against man coverage and fantasy points per target against man coverage at 2.5. He was really productive against man coverage as a rookie, caught about 50% of his contested targets. So he got downfield usage, he got end zone usage. If Sam Howell is just competent, decent, I think Dotson is like one of my favorite wide receivers and overall players to draft in the middle rounds and has, you know, significant upside. So I am very high on Jahan Dotson. And it really started a couple of days ago when I started, again, the process here in mid-May of just, you know, breaking down players and trying to see some of the metrics that could help them break out.
Yeah, that one's definitely interesting too, because also I guess there's an alternative here where if, say, Washington wasn't as good with Howell at quarterback, that could lead to more, you know, positive passing game script situations if they're trailing later in games. Yeah. And that could be good for fantasy value too. So like, I think there are actually multiple paths to success there, which sounds weird given that how we expect that team to perform from a general perspective.
And the overall play calling should be much improved with Eric Bieniemy there too. So
shots fired at Scott Turner. What did he do to you?
Just too many first down carries of Brian Robinson for 2 yards.
Former Panthers legend Scott Turner. I mean, come on.
definitely knew that was the route you were going. But yeah, I like Jahan Dotson almost as much. Like, obviously you don't project him as high as Olave and Garrett Wilson in London, but where he's going compared to those three fellow sophomore receivers, I do like the value quite a bit. Any other receivers that stand out? I mean, we see receivers break out all the time, so. But also, like, there seems to be, when I was looking at, like, just the overall receivers, like, Treylon Burks, also sophomore receiver, no competition for targets in Tennessee. Well, except for a tight end that we both love that we'll talk about in a little bit.
I was about to say, we can go straight into that if you want.
Yeah, like, I mentioned George Pickens, who I do like because his splits were a lot better with Kenny Pickett under center. And he was, you know, he showed that elite contested catchability as a rookie.
I have another wide receiver to bring up. I'm a little reluctant to call him a 2023 breakout receiver, but Alec Pierce of the Colts, think really meshes well with Anthony Richardson at quarterback.
He does.
Pierce, not George Pickens, led rookie wide receivers in contested catches last season. Maybe that had something to do with Matt Ryan without any juice in his arm. He really couldn't get the ball to him when he was actually
open. It wasn't even just that. It was like Alec Pierce had more deep targets than every Colt receiver combined. It was crazy. Like Michael Pittman and Frank Gregg's offense was mesh routes and crossing routes. Obviously, Paris Campbell didn't do much down the field. Like it was literally just if they ever threw the ball deep, it was to Alec Pierce.
But it makes sense. I know it's surprising if you just look at measurements because Michael Pittman is so big, but Pittman doesn't really play like a big outside receiver. Like he's running across the field and doing more possession-y type of stuff. And Pierce is a true like home run ball winner, right? And what's the scoop on Richardson? The belief is that he has a great arm, can really chuck it downfield, is actually surprisingly accurate downfield, but his accuracy numbers in college looked pretty bad because of how often he threw it downfield, and is not as accurate on those like shorter to intermediate type throws. So like possibly bad news in the short term for Josh Downs. Richardson might honestly be bad news for the passing offense in general if they're just going to be running the ball all the time. But like Pierce, to me, seems like the best complement to what Richardson seems to do well. And so I think I like him more long term. I don't know if I'm going to tell you to draft him in 2023 with the rookie potentially starting, but I like him long term as a mesh.
There's one player that I really want to bring up because I was really high on him in college and I looked like a genius for a little bit. And since then, everybody's been waiting. And small sample size, but in terms of like targets per out run and everything, he's right up there. And it's Kadarius Toney. And I'm like terrified, but like, my goodness, Scott, if he stays healthy, like I know we always want to talk about like, oh, which new Kansas City receiver is going to lead the team in targets? And it's like, okay, like we make cases for Sky Moore and MVS and Juju and Kadarius Toney and et cetera. Then it's just like, oh, Travis Kelce caught 100 passes. Probably happens again this season. But like, if Toney can play 13 games, just set the bar at 13. He can play 13 games. I really struggle to just completely ignore the upside.
Wouldn't tell you to. I wouldn't tell you not to draft Rashee Rice. Like, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
pretty much all of their wide receivers have a place as a sleeper because none of them are being drafted too highly.
Yeah. Like, Toney, that was the same year. That was the Amon-Ra year, correct?
His rookie year?
Yeah.
It might have even been a year before.
I can't remember, but like I was so high on him and I understood people were low on him and then he broke out those few games of the Giants and then, you know, had the injuries. But it's like just give him a couple screen passes and quick passes and let him make plays after the catch. Just if he plays 13 games, like he could really, really, really be really fun. But again, he's just really, really, really struggled to stay on the field. So that's definitely like you could throw Sky Moore in the same case too. He was mostly in special teams, was not good in special teams, but like there's a path for him. Like the concern with Sky Moore last year was even when players were out of the lineup, they went with Justin Watson over him. So that was a little bit concerning, but year two, hopefully he takes a step forward. Let's go to tight end where I'll just let you lead it off because I talked about this player at length. At length on the Dynasty Pod.
Okay, nice.
It's the easiest call for me. I think it's arguably the breakout candidate in fantasy football.
Maybe. It's just the only reservation is like, is it too deep to really even gamble on tight ends at this point? But I'm pretty optimistic for Chigozim Okonkwo of the Titans. And it's a pretty easy case to make statistically. He had 2.92 yards per route run last year. That was the best among regular tight ends. And you know what? Who's on that list? Good tight end. Second was Travis Kelce, 2.3. Mark Andrews was third, 2.2.
I've heard of them.
Dallas Goedert, 2.1. George Kittle, 2.0. Kyle Pitts, 2.0. I could make a pretty robust case that he deserves bounce back consideration.
Yes.
Pat Freiermuth, 1.8. And then Darren Waller was at 1.7. There were a couple of like weirdos here, Jordan Akins and Colby Parkinson, who didn't really play a lot. And Okonkwo, to be clear, did not play a lot. So like this could very easily be a small sample theater. But I think it's also important to note that a lot of those best tight ends weren't necessarily high draft picks the way that Okonkwo wasn't either as a fourth rounder last year. And the Titans, while they added a tight end in the fifth round as a rookie, Josh Wild, this year, I just think Okonkwo really kind of flashed in his rookie year, and I'm going to take a shot on a guy that was that efficient to maybe do even more when he gets probably a lot more playing time in his second season.
Yeah, so obviously Austin Hooper was there last season, and for the entire season, Okonkwo played 37% of the offensive snaps. But like you mentioned, among tight ends with at least 25 targets, he ranked first in yards per out run, second in targets per out run. And then we started to see him slowly kind of see more work and playing time starting in week 12. And then in from week 12 on, he averaged about 45% of the snaps. During that span, he was seventh among tight ends in receptions, seventh in receiving yards, first in fantasy points per snap. He was fourth among all tight ends in air yards per out run, according to FTN Fantasy. So, yes, like, and this is also an offense that's, you know, historically tried to feature the tight end at least. And, like, yes, is this offense going to change if Derrick Henry's healthy? No, it's 25 carries per game to Henry. But, like, with the ability for him to make plays after the catch and stretch the field vertically, he doesn't need eight targets. He doesn't need Dallas Goedert-type volume. You give him five, six targets, I think he can be efficient. Some goal line red zone work as well. I believe they actually gave him some carries, too, at times, like they would do with Jonnu Smith in the past. So, yeah, he's like my tight end 11 or 10 right now. I understand, like, you don't love the fact that, like, I get it's hard to make a case that both he and Treylon Burks fully break out if this is still a low-volume passing offense, but what if Tennessee is just bad? And, like, what if Henry doesn't stay healthy and they have to throw more? And also, at the end of the day, it's like, it's tight end. Like, after the top six, you're just kind of hoping for, you know, maybe you could throw, like, 7-8 with, like, Evan Engram in there as well, like, Pat Freiermuth, but, like, outside of the top seven or so, you're just hoping for upside, and I don't know if there's many tight ends after that range with more upside than Okonkwo, so I will be trying to draft him everywhere. I don't draft really like the top five tight ends, to be honest, because like yeah. I'd rather take the breakout wide receiver candidates we mentioned in the middle rounds than take, you know, Goddard as good as he is or Kittle in the middle rounds at tight end. Kyle Pitts, though, is interesting, too, because he can make a full-on case. He could break out finally this year if he's used correctly. I mean, I mentioned those air yards per out run we have at FTN Fantasy. Not just tight ends, but players in the NFL. No player in the NFL averaged more air yards per out run than Kyle Pitts last season at 4.1.
And Pitts had the Drake London deal where, like, his catchable target rate was super, super low. So, like, he was pretty effective or, I guess, efficient as a fantasy player last year minus the touchdowns. And, like, you know, he could see a huge ramp up in how many of his targets are actually catchable this year.
Looking else at tight end, like, not much else, to be honest. Like Greg Dulcich, you could have made the case last season. But, like, Sean Payton recently came out and said, like, he wasn't thrilled with the production that the Broncos got from the tight end position last year. And they traded for Adam Trautman. I don't want to fall for Irv Smith again. He is on the Bengals, but like at best, he's like fifth in targets on that team. So probably not going to be a lot of consistency there, despite the great environment. And like, if you want to count, like, I don't know if it really counts for like the rookie tight ends as a breakout, but like the rookie tight ends are all in pretty good spots, right? Dalton Kincaid, Sam Laporta, Michael Mayer, like most of the tight ends that were drafted this year are in pretty advantageous spots.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think breakout's the right word for it, but I'll throw out Mike Gesicki as someone maybe we could talk about a little bit, because I've noticed that I'm ranking him higher than pretty much everyone else at FTN. And I just feel like there was a lack of scheme fit with the like the new Mike McDaniel, Kyle Shanahan. Like, Gesicki is a tight end, but he's a field stretcher, right? And he's like he is a high air yards, low after the catch type of receiver. It's like the exact opposite of what McDaniel wants from his skill players. And it just didn't fit. And so they didn't use him. But Gesicki is a very talented player and kind of, I don't know, a little bit contrary to what you might expect, given that they don't really have a lot of arm strength at quarterback. Like, I just feel like Gesicki has a chance to be a much better fit in New England with their offensive scheme, such that we understand what it will be with the new offensive coordinator. And so, like, I'm willing to bet on a bounce back there. Where again, like you said, you're outside of the top eight or so, you're chasing upside because there's always going to be Cole Kmet on the waiver wire. And if it's not Cole Kmet, then it's Gerald Everett. And if it's not him, then it's Juwan Johnson. Like those dudes that are going to score you like 500 yards and five touchdowns for the season, they're available. So you need to shoot for guys that can get you top five. And I don't know how many of them there are.
Yeah. I guess the last player I'll mention And like he would have to win the job and things would have to go right, obviously. But like Jake Ferguson in Dallas, potentially, like he showed a little bit of flashes last season when Dalton Schultz was out. But like they also played plenty of snaps with Peyton Hendershot. They obviously drafted a tight end as well. So, but yeah, outside of the players you mentioned, it's tough to make strong cases for really anybody outside the top, you know, 15, 16 or so. Anything else, Scott, from, you know, I guess I would say the first edition of Breakout Candidates here on May the 18th.
I think we covered it pretty nicely.
Yeah, it's exciting time. Like I mentioned, I love getting lost in the analysis, trying to find reasons why I really am all in on a certain player and why I might be a little bit hesitant to draft a certain player. And obviously a lot will change. We have a lot to go forward, but yeah, a lot of coverage, a lot of content in FTN Fantasy. It's exciting. We have the best ball guide that was launched article wise. I mean, like so much coming up. I just started the Fantasy Crossroads series where I'm debating players being drafted right around each other in drafts and kind of making the case for and against both players. The first edition was Tony Pollard against Derrick Henry. Next week, I believe, will be Amon-Ra St. Brown and Garrett Wilson. And then I think after that, it's going to be Bijan and Jonathan Taylor. So that'll be fun. Scott, again,
strong
just,
thoughts on that if you need some contributions there.
Yeah, maybe it should have been Bijan and Dobbins. In that case, then.
I think I would be the lone dissenter there, so that's cool.
Any closing thoughts, Scott? Appreciate the time, as always. And, of course, you know, we're excited to see all the stuff you're doing, not just behind the scenes with the FTN data team, but also your articles and everything are top-notch as well.
Yep, thanks for having me on. I would say I'm not 100% sure when an EPA article is going to come up, but I'm working towards that. And in the shorter term, next week, it looks like I'm going to be writing a like ranking teams by their backfields type of article. So if you love lists and love rankings, that'll be a really fun one. Check me out on Twitter at Scott_Spratt. I'll put all of that out there for you to find.
Yeah, just reminding me, I think I'm actually doing the wide receivers and tight ends one. So it's just overall pass catching players. So that'll be fun. Not many surprises, I would imagine, but we'll see. We'll get into it. But appreciate the time, as always, Scott. And again, appreciate everybody listening. This has been the FTN DataCast. Probably going to be getting closer to like 2-3 episodes per week within the next couple weeks as we ramp up here in the off season. So be on the lookout for that. Subscribe, rate, review, all that great stuff. Really appreciate it. But until then, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at APfeiffer24 and at LochnerNFL.